And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Ken D. from San Diego.
Hi, my name is Ken, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here at Allied Gardens, that's for sure. Larry had invited me to come on over here, and we finally worked it out for tonight. And this morning, he had a colonoscopy. But thank God it's all behind him now. So I told him today he'd probably get to work all the slogans of AA, you know, like turn it over. Let go and let God. This too shall pass. And my favorite, but for the grace of God, you know, like, you know, I'm really excited to be here. I mean, I was about as excited as a mosquito at a nudist camp, you know, like it's great to be here with so many people that you know and not have to get on a plane and go through all the nonsense that you go through. Last time, a couple of weeks ago, Carol and I flew out to Chicago. And just to have something to eat on the plane, she grabbed a couple of Snickers bars, these big Snickers bars. And when we got to the airport going through that security for our protection, with a guy who goes, yeah, he pulled Carol over. They pulled Carol over, and they said, empty your bag. And she said, why? And they said, we just have to do this. So she emptied her bag, and they couldn't identify the two Snickers bars. So Carol is very good. I was looking from a distance here, and I'm thinking, I'm feeling sorry for the TSA guys, because which basically stands for tough shit, asshole, you can't take it on the plane, you know? So, and the lady said, oh, they were Snickers bars. And Carol said, what do you think they were, sawed-off shotguns? And I thought, oh. So it's nice just to have to come over here to, you know, to Allied Gardens and not go through all that. I want to congratulate Matt on his 15 years, and there were four people who took 90 days. Congratulations. One of the promises for the newcomers, those of you who have 90 days, is you'll notice pretty soon that your friends and neighbors will start waving to you using all five fingers. So, they'll be glad that you found this program, that's for sure. And I want to thank Linda for sharing before me. I was sitting there thinking, okay, what do I want to share about? And Linda, you gave me a good topic, which is the mind of the alcoholic. You know, like I was listening to it, and I'm thinking, this is as Linda sees it. You know, I'll take that one, not that one. You know, put mustard on that. You know, like, and I think that's the way most of us get here. You know, it's the story I like is about the three alcoholics who are in the mental institution. And the psychiatrist comes up to him, and he's trying to evaluate whether they can go home or not. And he says to the first one, how much is 3 times 3? And the guy says, 127. He says, sorry, you're going to have to stay just a little bit longer. And he goes to the second one. He says, how much is 3 times 3? And he says, Tuesday. And he says it defiantly, you know. He says, I'm sorry, you're going to have to stay a little bit longer. And then he goes to the third guy, and he says, how much is 3 times 3? And that guy says, 9. And he says, good. He said, would you tell these two how you got that? He said, it was simple. I just subtracted Tuesday from 127, you know. And, and that's what's going up there all the time, you know. The hamster's dead, but the wheel is still turning, you know. The background music for a newcomer thinking should be do 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 do. You know, like I love talking to newcomers because it's like no one's there. You know, it's like. And they're always going to share with you their best idea, which, you know. And if you're here, how many have less than a year in the program? Oh, that's great. Well, first of all, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're really glad you're here. And I want to tell you that during the first year in particular, you're going to think that the old-timers are laughing at you. And you're going to be absolutely right. And I want you to know they're not going to be laughing at your problems. They're going to be laughing at your solutions. You know, like the word more will always come in there. If I just had more, you know. And the deal is it doesn't matter, you know, how much you have or don't have. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says if the alcoholic doesn't drink, he tends to act much like other men. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic is in his mind. You know, I don't know about you guys, but if this was scotch and I were to take a drink of it, reality would completely change. You know? It could be anything I wanted it to be, you know. I could watch Alice in Wonderland and look at it as a documentary, you know, like I just say, you know, like this is, you know. Yeah, I know the King of Hearts personally, you know, like, yeah, yeah. I've been there, yeah, yeah. Seems to me I bought a sandwich right around there, you know. Like, and the deal is, the nice thing about when you first get sober is that the things you remember most vividly never happen. And you have all these fears, you know, and they're called phantom fears, which means they don't really exist, you know. But if you're an alcoholic, you can make them come to life. You know, you have the great capacity to come to life. An alcoholic is like watching somebody milk a mouse, you know. A lot of activity, but very little milk, you know, like... And the deal is that when you're working with a newcomer, you have to remember that we were once newcomers too. And, you know, we went through all the nonsense that you're going through. So if you're new and you can't identify with some of the happiness of the old timers, just remember at one time they were where you were. They were road warriors, you know. They had no idea what was going on, but they were for sure that they'd figure it out if they just had a couple of drinks, you know. I don't know, the mind of the alcoholic is so interesting to me because we drank alcohol. And alcohol, if you look on a chemical chart, is a depressant. And we drank it to pep us up. I think I'll have a pick-me-up. You know, like, you say, hey, isn't that interesting? And Dr. Silkworth in the big book talks about the mind of the alcoholic. He says, we're in full flight from reality. We're outright mental defectives. You know, we're producers of confusion, even in our best moments. What a resume. I mean, what a resume. You know? So what do you do best? I'm a creator of confusion, you know? I'm in full flight from reality, you know? Like, you know? And the nice part about being sober is that after a while you come to realize that all along I drank... just like the book said, because I liked the effect of it. And the effect for me was it took the real out of reality. Once I had a couple of drinks, you know, I can remember, and I shared this earlier in the day at a meeting, and I can remember feeling really good just walking into a bar before I even got a drink. Once I knew, it was like coming home for Thanksgiving, you know. You knew it was going to be for the birds. So it's like you go in, and you'd be there, and you'd order a drink, and even while they were pouring it, you'd say, ah, you know? And the nice part about it is once you took it in, you know, and no matter what care you had in the world, it suddenly went away, you know, like... If you owed money to somebody, you'd say, to hell with them, they're not going to get that. You know? Never cared for that bitch anyway. You know? You'd be able to take anything and rearrange it, you know? And away I went to work tomorrow, you know. I used to like when they fired you. And they'd say, we're firing you because you're not showing up on time. So you have 2 weeks, and over the next 2 weeks, we expect you to be here on time. And you used to wonder, who's the crazy person here? You know? But I always remember one time I was whistling, and the guy said to me, we'd prefer you don't whistle while you work. And I said, I'm not working. You know, like, you know. I grew up in this town, little town called Brooklyn. And everybody in my neighborhood, their name began with A. It was like A. Vinny, A. Tony, A. Nicky, A. Joey, you know. You know, 85% of the suicides in my neighborhood were assisted. You know, like, and they used to say things like, hey, he fell asleep in the trunk of a car, deserved to be shot. You know, like, And I'm not anti-drug because I realize a lot of people are duly addicted today. But the point was, in my neighborhood, nobody used drugs. Absolutely no one. This was in the 40s and 50s. Nobody used drugs. Because if you used drugs, the first time they caught you, they'd open the car door, close it on your hand. As a reminder, we don't do that. And if you somehow forget, slip. They'd say things like, hey, what happened to Nicky? Yeah, I think he moved to Jersey. You know what I mean? They had zero tolerance long before zero tolerance caught on, you know? And I don't know about you guys, but every now and again, I would have run-ins with legal authorities. And it wasn't that I was a bad guy. I was just an annoying guy, you know? And I would end up in situations, and my mind was, I always have to explain it a little bit more. And when they tell you have the right to remain silent, you know, I never had the ability. You know, I always felt there was something else you could say. And I always feel, and if you guys, there's some of you may have to go out and drink again. If you do, you should have one joke in your arsenal in case you get arrested. You should be able to say something funny on the way to the station house. So I'll give you one of mine, because this was a real knee slapper, you know? And the deal is, and you have to wait till you're in the right position. You know, your hands are behind you, you're in the back, and the nice officers are taking you downtown. And you say, you know the difference between a police car and an elephant? And they say, no. What's the difference between a police car and an elephant? You say, well, with an elephant, the trunk is in the front and the asshole's in the back, you know? Oh. It's a pull to the side of the road. We're glad you're here. I mean, And I'll tell you the truth. This is the reason I like to go out and talk, because I love to hear people laugh, because I know a couple of things about laughter that most people don't know, and that is you cannot laugh and think at the same time. So every time you're laughing, you're getting a respite from you. And if you're sitting in one of these seats, trust me, you need the break, you know, like, If there were a song for AA, it would be, I'm always on my mind. And the deal is that when I first got here, I moved into a place. In fact, there's a guy here who visited that place, Bill, my buddy Bill. And we decided to celebrate a Super Bowl my first year of sobriety. So we said, let's have a Super Bowl party. So I said, yeah, we'll have it in my place. Now, I had a place where crackheads didn't even bother to break in, you know. They kind of did walk-bys, like, don't even stop there, you know. And I went out, and they said, well, you know, get some stuff. So what I got was $5 worth of bologna, which at that time was a lot of bologna. And the only thing, I mean, when my wife left, I mean, when she left, I had a card table, and she left me a Hummel, which my mother had given me when we got married. And she said, you keep the Hummel because it was a gift from your mom, and you know how close we were. So I had this card table when the guys came over, and I had just come out in 1970 with the 2-liter bottles of soda. So I had a couple of 2-liter bottles of soda, $5 worth of bologna, and the card table looked pregnant. You know, it had like a bulge in it. And it was a cold day in January, you can imagine, and the guys were there, and Bill was there, Fast Eddie was there, and they demanded something that I just didn't know what the hell they were talking about. Heat. I had no heat at the time because I had to spend the money on the bologna, you know, like, I had a gas oven. So they took turns putting their feet in the gas oven. And some of them took longer than they should have because the rest of us were a little chilly. But, you know, I think back to the people I got sober with, and I am so happy that I got sober right where I was with the people I was with because they saved my life. You know, they literally saved my life. You know, my sponsor took me on a 12-step call. And the very first 12-step call I ever went on with my sponsor, I was a couple of weeks sober. And he said to me, you know, can you go get this guy? And I said, sure, I can go get this guy. And he said, you sure? I said, yeah. And he was a pretty forceful guy. And I said to him, look, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not mentally retarded. I can go get this guy. So anyway, I got out of the car, and I went to get the guy, and he said he'd drive around the block, and when he come back, he picked me up. Well, when he came back, I have the guy on the ground, and I'm hitting him with a garbage can lid. Somewhere between the guy making the call and me showing up with my sponsor, he had what's called a change of heart. Which I have since found out he was entitled to. You know, like... But I don't want you to think I was a mercenary. I mean, you know, like I hit him maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 times tops. And I can tell you this, that after the third shot, he was willing to turn his will and his life over to me, you know. He was saying, I'll go, you know. And I thought, this is like healing, you know. This is, you know. And I went, what a wonderful thing. I'm recruiting for AA, you know. And I didn't want to fail because this was the first assignment they had ever given me. So when I got back in the car, my sponsor whistled me back like, you know, I was a canine. And we started down the street, and he says, I want you to do 2 favors for me. I said, sure, what's that? He said, first, don't ever consider that a 12-step call. And he said, second, don't tell anybody I'm your sponsor for a while. You know, let's see how this thing goes, you know? So after that, whenever they had tough cases, they'd say, take the hammer with you, you know, like... You know, and I love doing 12-step work, you know. I really did. I never tell this story, but I'll tell it because Bill is here. But I talked Bill. My sponsor said to me, you will find God wherever you find God. And I wanted to find God, to be honest with you. But I was raised Catholic. I have nothing against the Catholic Church. It just wasn't there for me, that's all. And I'm sure they were doing the right things at that time. I just wasn't tuned in. So I was walking down. They had just had riots because we got sober when they had just had the summer riots. And there was glass like 6 inches from the sidewalk where the windows had blown out. And I was walking through an all-black neighborhood on a Sunday. And I heard this music. And I thought, wow, you know. And it sounded to me, to be honest with you, like that's where God was. So I knocked at the door, and it was an all-black church, Mount Pisgah Church. And I said to the guy, he said, what are you doing here? He was a nice guy. And he probably figured, you know, you just had to look at me then and realize, you know, this guy may be sober, but he's no day at the beach, you know, like, you know. So he said, what are you doing here? I said, I think I hear God. I'd like to come in. And he said, okay, come on in. So I went in, and they took me down front, and I stayed for the service. Now, I had gone to Catholic churches where they started out taught and in Latin, and then we had these very formal. This was a great service. People were having a good time, you know. And the minister, at that time, there was a guy on television, Flip Wilson, and he used to do an impersonation of a minister in a black church. And I thought it was the greatest thing. And there I was in this church, and this minister was up there, and he was going, "He's out of work. She's out of work. It's going to be all right." And hell, I started stomping. When everybody started stomping, I started stomping, and I think, you know what? I feel it's going to be all right. You know, like. So the following Sunday, I talked Bill into going. I said, "I think I found God. I'll take you to church." When we got there, Bill had a look on him. In all honesty, he went into the service with me, but he never went back again. I went for a couple of months. I'd go to the coffee thing, coffee and donuts, and the first guy I had asked me to sponsor him in AA was a black guy. And he was related to that church. And he figured if I came to that church, then I must have not been so bad. You know? And his name was Willie. And my sponsor said to me, "If you're gonna sponsor people, be honest with them." And so Willie said to me, he said, "Ken," he said, "I have this." Now, he was, I remember, he was new. And he said, "I'm having this dream that I'm in bed and it's surrounded by snakes. And my mother's on the roof across the street and she's yelling, 'Willie, you're going to die. Willie, you're going to die.'" He said, "What should I do?" So I gave him all that hokey stuff that had been told to me, you know, read the big book and, you know. And when he walked away, my sponsor said, "Well, if you don't want to help that guy, don't help him. But don't tell him you're going to help him and then tell him crap like that." So I said, "What should I have told him?" He said, "Give him something practical, like pick up one of those snakes, throw it at his mother, try to knock her off the roof. So he doesn't have to put up with that, maybe get a good night's sleep." You know? So I was getting good advice right out of the gate, you know. And the deal is that, you know, when you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can go anywhere and be with anyone. You know, you really can. Because you're moving, as the book says, you're moving with a power that's much stronger than anything that would take away from you. You know, and that was the nice thing. My sponsor and I went through the steps just the way they were in the big book. Not quite the way Linda laid them out, but we went through the steps just the way they were in the big book. And as we were going through it, I got evicted from my hiding places. You know, all my life, I was trying to hide from things that I didn't want to look at. And then as we went through those steps, we got into stuff, and I got to get rid of a lot of stuff, you know, just kind of weed it out. And I found myself living, you know, like starting to live a little bit comfortable in my own skin. And, like, you know, I would hang out with people. You know, I hung out with guys. They weren't the brightest bulbs in the room. You know, Bill was the exception. He was okay. But, you know, most of these guys, you say, "There's a dead bird." They look up, you know, like, they were, you know. We got through school totally unscarred by education, you know. I was sober about 3 years before I realized that Moby Dick wasn't a venereal disease. You know, like it was a deal. Like, you know, it was just a matter of coming to understand that, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on. But I noticed that the guys who were doing this and staying active in the program were living happy, joyous, and free. And the guys who were doing the activity. Now, the activity for me is reading the book. The action is actually implementing those steps into your life. You know, knowing what's in the book is okay, but only if you're going to use it to implement into your life. You know, I tell the guys I sponsor, my job is very simple as a sponsor. It's to point towards the principles of the program. That's my job. And your job is not to bite my finger. You know, like, just just try to figure out the fact that this is the way it is. And you don't have to do anything that's really big. I mean, when I hear people describe the program sometimes, it sounds so complicated. It seems like you need a degree in engineering or something. I'll give it to you real simple. Do stuff. Be a verb, not a noun. You know, be a verb. You know, do stuff. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't, stop immediately. You know? I could say that slower if you want. You know, like... And try to remember that this is a joke and we're the punchline, you know? And like, this is supposed to be some happy, joyous, and free. There's whole pages in the book to talk about this is supposed to be happy, joyous, and free. We're not a glum lot. You know, God wants us to have a couple of yucks along the way. And that's why he gives us other human beings, you know, like this, you know? Let's face it. When you look at God objectively, which I try to do, it's he gave man his sexual peak at 18. And woman, hers at 42. You know he's got a sense of humor. You know, like, you know he has a sense of humor, you know? And when you hear people, some people come in and they try to convince you that God is actually plotting against them. You know, like, I never had a break in life. And you know, And they go on and on and on. So I try to give them stuff that's very practical, and that is, look, when your dad ejaculated, he let go with 250,000 sperm. He had to only hit one egg. You're the winner. You know, like, you know, you're the winner. You know? You came out of the chute 250,000 to 1. That's a long shot. I mean, you can't get those odds in Vegas. You know, like, so you win. You know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So, you know, don't convince yourself that the whole world is conspiring against you. It's not, you know. And when you go to sleep at night, you know, if you sleep 8 hours and you go to sleep at night, and you're over 60, which a lot of people are, you will have slept 20 years. 20 years. And the deal is that some power took care of you while you were asleep. It made sure that you functioned and were okay so that you could wake up in the morning and if you're an alcoholic, get back to screwing things up. You know, like... And that's what you want to do because you don't want to lose all your skills. You know, you want to maintain some skills where people don't expect too much from you, you know. I like telling people I don't know stuff because I notice that if you know a lot of stuff, they ask you a lot of stuff. When I got sober, they had a language. The old timers seemed to have a grunt language, like, you know, what should I do? Huh? Book, you know. Work, you know. I came to California and I was sober and I used to hear people out here. That was in 74. I met Bob and a bunch of folks out here and in 1974 and I'd hear people say, well, what's your career choice to a newcomer? What's your career choice? You know? This guy is out there where the buses don't run. You know, like he you know He's not able to drive a Twinkie mobile yet, you know, like, you're asking him. When I got sober, they used to say, "Hey, yo, get a job, get off the corner, try to do something that's not indictable, you know. Try to make your mother proud, you know, like." And the deal was is that's you know it wasn't so confusing. And so if you're in this room tonight, I can tell you that there's a power working in your life, and it doesn't matter what you call it. It doesn't matter whether you understand it. It doesn't matter whether you can feel it at every moment. It's there, you know? And if you're around here long enough, you're going to start to notice people who fall up instead of fall down. You know, this guy, Isaac Newton, and we have little Isaac here tonight with Dave. Is he here? And Isaac Newton discovered gravity. He didn't invent it. He just discovered it. It was around for a long time before he got to it. You know, why is the apple falling down? Well, let's wait for Isaac, you know. He'll clue us in here. So if you understand any of the universal laws of physics, you'll know that if there's a law that says something falls down, there must be a law opposite of that that says something falls up. What's the law that allows us to fall up? It's when you start to grow spiritually. You start to fall up. The big book says there are actually people who rise above their problems. They don't even notice they're a problem, you know? The Chinese have written symbols, and there's a word you hear a lot of. It's called crisis. You know, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. You know, and while you're having a crisis, there's two symbols that the Chinese use to write the word crisis. The first is danger, and the second is opportunity. And if you focus on the danger only, you miss out on the opportunity. So many times we're in the middle of something, and it's a great chance to grow and open up new doors and try new things, and we miss them because all we see is the danger. You know, danger, danger. And you got to remember, you got this mind. You know, like Ben is here tonight. I hadn't seen Ben in a while. And Ben went on a TV show, and he won a trip to Greece. And when he called back, he said, I'm leaving here. Everything is broken. Yeah, it's an old... That's why people go there, Ben. So Ben said, let me trade it off for something else. And he came back and went to Vegas. So the deal is that all this stuff goes on in our head. And to us, it makes perfect sense. You know, we don't even notice it sometimes that we're right in the middle of insanity. You know, we're just like the guy with, you know, how you get to this formula. You know, it's like we just get there. You know, Winston Churchill made a quote one time, and he said, Americans will always do the right thing right after they've exhausted every other alternative. And that's true with alcoholics. You know, we have to try stuff, and then, you know, you fall down and it doesn't work. And so then you convince yourself this time. It's going to be different, you know? And then you have those old-timers that say clever things like, you know, if the wall is so high, you can't get over it, and so low, you can't get under it, and so wide, you can't get around it. Maybe, just maybe, you belong on this side, you know? You know? And you look at him and go, wow. Ooh, man. Roots running deep on that geranium, you know, like, wow, whoa, this is good stuff, you know. And then I had a guy tell me one time, and I thought, wow, if someone had told me this in the seventh or eighth grade, it would have really helped me out. And he said, be what you is and not what you ain't. Because if you is what you ain't what you is. And I said to myself, man, you know, if I had only met you sooner, you know, like, it would have saved me a lot of heartache, you know. And the whole deal of being here is, if you haven't figured it out yet, I'm going to give you the really short, abbreviated version of this thing, is that as you go through these steps, what's going to happen, apply them in your life, what's going to happen to you is a lot of things that you used to think about that were all negative are not going to take up any of your time at all. And you're going to start to focus on what's the solution here. What's the solution? And you're going to realize that we're all God's kids. I don't know how all this nonsense started about being different, but it started. And it ends when you start saying, I'm not going to play that game. You know, I'm just not going to play that game. You know, we're all swimming in the pool. And if the deep water scares you, come down the shallow end with me and the kids. You know, you can stand up, and I can assure you the water's warmer. So and you never get in over your head, you know, like everything is just okay. And laugh a lot. There's a lot to be said in laughter. You know, if you're laughing, you realize that it can't be all that bad. And most of the fear you have, if you're able to get it down on paper and really look at it, it's phantom fear. It's about stuff that's never going to happen. It never has happened, never will happen. You know, you hear during this economic thing, you know, people say, oh, my whole life. You know, I came into this world with absolutely nothing. And I still have most of it. You know, like, you know. And the deal is what are you actually in charge of? One day I spent a whole day trying to figure out what I was in charge of, and I came up with two things. And what I'm in charge of is how I'm going to spend my time while I'm here on God's earth and the attitude I'm going to bring to that. Everything else is up for grab. You know, everything else is up for grab. We're like a flea on a log going down a river. Every now and again, the log goes around a bend in the river, and we think we're steering. You know, we're just along for the ride, you know. And remember the mind you're working with. I saw a cartoon in the paper a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, God, this is AA in action. And it was in one of those kind of like caveman cartoons. And the cave guy was hanging up a sign saying, do not enter, over his cave. And these other two guys are looking at each other, and I know they had to be alcoholics. And the one guy says to the other guy, I never had any desire to go in there until he put up that sign. You know, like, that's just the way it is. And then I saw another cartoon that really got me because I thought, this is, again, AA stuff. And it was heaven, and there were two entrances going into heaven. And over the one entrance, it said, the right religion. And it was backed up as far as you could see. And then the other entrance said, the wrong religion. And there was nobody in front of it. And the one angel looks at the other angel and says, I don't think they get it. You know, I don't think they get it, you know. Yeah. So just enjoy yourself, you know, be a verb. Don't worry about what's going on around you because 90% of it doesn't affect you. You know, someday you're going to know you're really sober, and I can give you some hints. Like someday you'll hear somebody say, hey, asshole. And you won't even look up, you know, like... You'll know, hey, he couldn't be talking to me, you know, like. And don't forget the newcomers if you're an old timer, and don't forget the old timers if you're a newcomer. You know, we all need each other. We're all in this boat together, you know, and all we ask you to do is sit down, pick up an oar, and row. Please don't go topside. And take care of the boat, like be the captain, you know. That's when we seem to hit everything in our path, you know. And the nice part about it is after a while you'll realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. There's a simple line in How It Works, and we read it all the time. And sometimes I think people just don't hear it after a while. They become almost immune to it. And that is, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And if you find God now and you start living life in this moment and not get preoccupied with stuff that happened back post-World War II and not anticipating what's coming in 20 years, you know, you're going to find out that this day, the 17th of April, is a great day. You know, we only got a couple hours left to really screw things up. So we got to get busy, you know, like, and so I'm gonna let you hear something that I heard a long time ago, and it's meant a lot to me, and I heard it on a spiritual retreat. And it says, you cannot catch hold of it, nor can you let go of it. When you are speaking, it's silent. When you are silent, it speaks. God does not yell. He whispers. You have to be attentive to that whisper. You have to be attentive to the fact that you and I were put here and sent out from the home office for one basic reason, and that is to try to be of service to one another. We got to take really good care of one another. We're only on loan. God bless you.
Thank you.